Welcome to your go-to podcast for making the most of your second chance after a conviction, inspiring you to navigate the challenges associated with having a criminal record. I'm your host, Dion, and this is Uncensored Inspiration. Welcome to Uncensored Inspiration, where you can speak freely and think boldly. This is your go-to podcast for all things inspirational. I am your host, Dion, and today's episode is on second chances. Let the story begin. We're going to welcome to the stage Lamar Epps from Buddy's Barbershop in Norristown and Carmina Taylor from CarMac Consulting in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Let's jump into today's hot topic. According to the National Conference of State Legislators, approximately 1 in 3 adults, 77 to 79 million people, have a criminal background. How do you think criminal backgrounds affect the overall health and well-being of our community, Buddy?
Well, when you say the overall well-being, far as like what?
We're talking about jobs, community morale, the structure of our family. What happens to our community once a criminal conviction comes into play?
In our community, more than anything, is selling drugs. So selling drugs, like, you'll get more time selling drugs than you do if you kill somebody, you know?
Absolutely.
So for the better half. So that's how society has it. You know, when you come home, it's all what you want to make it, you know, like a lot of guys come home, they get their CDL license. And you know, they're able to get a pretty good job. Some of them, you know, barbers, but like you said, the majority of young, older men have records, but far as the second chances, in certain situations there is second chances, but when you have a felony, certain jobs you can't get. But our president has so many felonies,
jobs you can't get, with the exception of one.
Yes, which, you know, I understand where we at in America, but at the end of the day, it's justice and just us.
So with there being justice and just us, where do just us stand?
I'll say more than anything, and I'm only speaking from our community, is somewhat a standstill, because we in our town, we don't fight for everyone. We only fight when it has to deal with somebody that's in our family or whatever. And then, like, we don't go to the end. Like, you know, we have rallies, we have, sit-ins and what we're going to do. But I always ask, what's the end? You know, how far are we going to take it? So that's where I'm at on that.
So I really think it's a combination of things. I think there's systemic stigmatism that is placed on people in traditional workplaces. I went out across the state with Brandon Flood, who was the Secretary of Board of Pardons a few years back, and we went across the state. And one of the cities in our state that I was really floored with was Williamsport. 80% of the Black people in Williamsport are from Philadelphia. They had convictions and were released over 30 years ago. There was a man there that was in his 70s and he couldn't get a CNA job because his record he'd already served his time. He had been out for 30 years and he couldn't get a CNA job. And I think there's certain traditional workplaces that still don't want to give second chances to people with decades and decades out of incarceration. I think the problem with just us is that the just us is just in my family. As long as it's, you know, I'm concerned with the vindication or what interests someone in my family member, opposed to what the holistic problem is. And I'm personally tired of the protests and the overtness of trying to address issues, but not following up with a strategic plan. And so one of the things that attracted me the most about working with Brandon is that one of the barriers that I found when people were out there is getting over the process of how to apply for a pardon, right? How do you get your second chance? Because I didn't have a particular story in my family per se that had an incarceration story. So as I grew to learn the perils, the obstacles, the frustration, and people from outside of Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, and Philly not knowing the processes to remediate their own selves, Brandon at the time had an expedited process to get a pardoning process. And so what we tried to do was encourage people, and we went to barbershops and beauty salons across the state to encourage people to venture into the process of getting yourself pardoned, but then to spread the word to other people that it could be possible as well. So I think that is the barrier. And so now that he's left, and now that we have another lieutenant governor in there and the Board of Pardons itself, from my understanding, they really are looking at, what's that, non-minor offense, like big criminal cases and not these drug charges, and helping people get over those things. Because even with a record, a state record, you can't go to Canada. You can't carry a firearm. And again, we have to hold our system accountable for vindication. And one of the things I attached the whole mindset of doing beyond just us is looking at the fact that the lieutenant governor is singularly responsible for the pardoning process. How do we hold him accountable as voters to ensure that they're going to really do something to liberate a portion of people, especially Black in our state, that don't have the opportunity to have a second chance? So it's a myriad of things. I'm sorry, bud.
And then also, the young man that, his name's Brandon, right?
Brandon.
Yeah, bro. We had a thing at the barbershop. Mm-hmm. We got a few guys coming. Like I said, everything is, are you going to go to the end with it? Which most of the guys didn't. Now, there's one guy, I ain't going to say his name, but this guy, I'm talking about, sold drugs, did drugs. You know, like you said, when he says second chances, this guy came back around. He had opportunity. He graduated from Monaco. From Monaco, he went to Chestnut Hill. Now, from Chestnut Hill, I think that's where he went back. He just he received his master's. Also, he told me, well, today's when did he come in? Saturday? I think he came in the shop on Saturday, and he was so excited, he got his pardon.
Oh, great.
And as far as I know, he's the only one out of 25
that saw it through.
That he went to the end with it. And now he was like, I can get my firearm. I can apply for federal jobs now, where, like he said, you know, I'm making 70 something now, but you know, hopefully in a couple months I'll boost up to like 120. I can apply for them jobs to get from the door because of the pardon. And he also said he wished the other guys, you know, had followed through with it also, but they didn't, you know.
And I apologize, buddy, because I didn't know what you meant by seeing it through to the end. You were talking about the full process and in the waiting period
of everything.
Once your pardon is in the system.
Right.
Oh, I thought you meant something else.
Yeah.
So that brings me to the second question, which is, do you think your community would improve if more persons had the opportunity to get a second chance? But more importantly, how do we help them stay the course for a second chance?
Well, I'm a believer in, you can leave the person to drink the water, but, you know, as if they're going to drink it or not. You know, like, you know, my my thing in Norristown, where I helped a lot of kids go to higher education. So a lot of them got second chances, you know, the one guy, he's a principal now, you know, he went like from bachelor, master's, now he has his doctorate. Now this guy, he was a hood guy, you know, sold drugs, you know, he came from Jersey, he was in the gang, and now he's a principal, you know. So it's about taking your second chance, you know. How can we keep people, grown men and women, on track? Really, my belief is you can just guide them, send them to where they have to go to, and, you know, and then pray, you know, hope that they keep on going.
Do you feel like at this point in life, though, because I feel like the world has changed, and the opportunity for me to say, oh, I'm going to get up and make this change requires a village. Now I need a little bit more encouragement. Now I need direction. Now I actually need to see a person who's been through this process and is successful. Do you think that that could help people stay the course?
It'll help some, but not most, I don't think. And, you know, where, you know, the young man that I was talking about, you know, he tried to help several other people through the process. But like he said, they stopped. You know, oh, man, I got to do this and I got to do that. Yeah. You know, you always was told trouble's easy to get into, but hard to get out. So, you know, and you got caught doing what you wasn't supposed to do. So now there's avenues that you can get out. So it's a part, are you going to take it?
Well, and I also think to your point about the village is that, you know, if you're 40 and above, you grew up with that sense of village, and some people have lost that sense of village. I think that this time where we are in society, we have to reinvent
a new village.
Exactly. We have to reimagine actually a new village, but really hold on to that mindset that can be cultivated by people. All we have right now is us
and each other.
And so it's going to take people like Buddy, that's a living example of support and dedication and commitment. His whole persona speaks for himself. So we need people like him, and who he's connected with, to reimagine a village that's going to help us get through today, tomorrow, and next year. Because we're in a place now that it is clear and present that our federal government has no interest in anything but a white nation and a white superior nation. And so we have to really have those hard conversations about what a village is necessary for us. If there's someone that you care about, and I've said this actually to a few people in different types of settings that I've been in, we have lost caring about people as a whole. We have lost caring about humanity as a whole. Then you put the layer of being Black, you put the layer of me being a Black woman,
single family household,
all of that, you know, that person still needs a village to get their child through education. We have to get, like, I don't have school age children, but I care about someone else's kid that's going through something that is a school age person. And so at the end of the day, that's what I think is necessary. And I'm actually really glad that you're bringing this topic up, because we don't talk about, in a non-spiritual sense, what a second chance looks like for people, right? Second chances are always about God giving you that grace, God always giving you chances upon chances. But we as human beings, we as Black people, we should be thinking about giving people second chances.
I think we're removed from that because we're now in a place where everyone is serving self.
Sure.
I think social media has heightened our need for attention.
Sure.
Our need to be seen and heard, which often excludes the person next to me and what's important to them.
Right.
So with that being said, for my last question, from your perspectives, what can people do to work on their second chance? How should they get started? Carmina.
in terms of incarceration at this point, right?
So not even incarceration,
or post-incarceration.
Has 1,000 traffic tickets. You never paid them. You now have a criminal record.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I get started with My Village? How can I get started with turning this around so that I can reinvent myself back into society without a criminal background?
So I think knowledge is important. And I think people do not utilize or demand more services of their legislators. If you have a state offense, I would immediately start reconnecting with your state legislator that's supposed to represent you to find out what are the realities of the process today, because it looks very different since Brandon left, right? You have a different lieutenant governor. You have a different board members on the board, bargaining board. So I think, and we don't do that enough either as Black folks, we always, politicians come and ask us for their vote. But we don't follow up with exactly. So I think because of the times that we're in, if you have a state offense, if you have a federal offense, knowledge is power. Find out where you can start the process of freeing yourself from what has happened to you. And then go to other community leaders, other people that may have some connections, to try to figure out how do you extend that branch from what you're learning from legislators. And then we need to go into their family and friends and really start this process of dialogue of how we can still connect with people and help them.
Awesome.
I think a three-pronged process.
I think, for the better half, a lot of guys I know that came from out of prison, they start getting involved in the community. Betterment of trying to school these young guys that want to be hood and think they can do it a little different or whatever. So the ones that I know, they giving back, and they trying to get themselves, back in the community, but not get back, quote unquote, in the flow of the hood. Because like you said, the hood is not the same. And, I always have, I always ask people when we talk, do you consider yourself a Black American or African American? Because with myself, I consider myself, I'm Black in America. And for whatever reason, we don't like each other. We don't have no pride. We don't have no tradition. The Chinese people, they stick together. The Indian people, they stick together. The Native Indian people, they stick together. The Puerto Ricans, everybody sticks together except for us Blacks in America.
I feel like a whole systemic question and podcast we can go on its own.
Yeah, yeah. I
condition that way.
I could go on that and what you just said, I disagree. With Miss Dion just said
that we're conditioned to not stick together.
Like that's an excuse to me. Just like when they say
it's a learned behavior.
Like when they say that back in the day, SATs are culturally biased.
They are.
So now, are they culturally biased for maybe schools that didn't have books and schools that didn't have the right curriculum?
The fact that it asks for your race to say whether or not you're Black, white, or anything other shows the bias right there, because my race has nothing to do with my aptitude in taking this test. Why is this a question? So you can curve this to fit my race.
Well, like you said, that's a whole different discussion. But, I went to Wazig and I learned everything that they learned, the Caucasians, the Indians, Chinese, or whatever. So me, I can't use that excuse with the SATs and other different things. But things have changed. I was over in my neighborhood, Penn Lynn, and, when I grew up in Penn Lynn, it was all Black.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it might have been one or two white women that married Black men, And when I say one or two, that's what I'm saying, one or two. Not like, just one or two. I could sit here and name everybody that was in every house around the whole neighborhood. I was there the other day, you know, lady kind of look at me like, I never seen you before, you know. But as a whole, you know, getting a second chance, you got to take your second chance. If you're not willing to take it, then nah, you won't get it. So
my final thought would be, from your perspective, what would be the best way to start working on a second chance for anyone who has a criminal background?
One, talk to your lawyer that you had, your state representative, your community, people who knows what to do and how to go about to do it, and then stay on track and do it. So, people, most people, like I said, that I know, they come out, get their CDL, and all the ones I know, they doing well that went and did it. But when you got that felony, it's certain jobs you can't go for.
It's a different stigma.
You know, when they say when you go to jail, you got to take all these courses, different courses, and get different certificates. You come out with all these different certificates and licenses, but you can't use them.
Absolutely.
You know, so, but like you said, you just got to keep on going. When one door shuts, another door opens.
I agree. From your perspective, what can people do to work towards bettering themselves, putting themselves in alignment for a second chance? We talked about talking to our legislators. You talked about getting involved in the community. What else can a person do to stay inspired and work towards their second chance?
I think they would have to define what a growth mindset is for themselves.
I like that.
You know, so many people say growth mindset, but you have to reflect on who you are now, what you were, and what you want to be. And think about what it takes and the choices and the environments you need to be around for you to grow to where you want to be and define it for yourself.
Almost like creating a new village, because one of the other things I wanted to say in our parting is coming back to the same village may not work for some people. And we need to keep in mind that what worked in the past is what got me down this path.
Right.
And now I need to create a new village internally as well as externally.
And that would incorporate what a growth mindset also encompasses. You know, you should be around people. And I actually said this to a friend of mine, that person doesn't bring me joy. And I need to be around people
around that person, right?
If that doesn't person. Exactly. So, I mean, you have to look at if where you want to go, you need to be around people with the same type of mindset that want to move forward and are happy for you to move forward as well.
That is important.
I think there's a lot of times that we're around people that smile in your face and still want to do deceiving things behind your back. And I think you have to get out of a level of maturity that you can ascertain or discern the people that have your best interest in mind.
And the type of energy that
Absolutely.
Brings to your life in helping you accomplish
energy
your goals.
Is very, very important. And that has to be part of your growth. You know, what type of energy do you need and what type of energy do you need to be around?
Agreed. Buddy, any final thoughts?
Carmina basically said everything
that
I was going to say.
Sorry.
And I definitely agree with her 100%. I stand by it. You know, getting a second chance, you got to go for it. And like she said, you know, what mindset are you in? You know, do you want a second chance? Do you want to talk about a second chance? Or do you really want a second chance?
Absolutely. The difference between talking about it, wanting it, and actually putting forth the effort to get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, listen to this podcast. If you want a second chance and don't know how to go about it, I'm at 206 East Penn Street. I can guide you wherever you need to go. where a lot of people that comes out, they do come and yo, Mr. Bud, can you get me a job? Yo, can you do this? Yo, can you do that? And one thing the community knows that I will rock out for you if that's what you really want to do. So.
But I also think you plant the seed with your podcast is just another twist that
thank you.
Is inspiring in itself. And to bring that conversation up at this day and time and to offer people opportunities to have the self-confidence to explore that option. So I like that. And I like the uncensored part because you really made it comfortable to just be able to speak and not have any sugarcoat. So
that's right. This is where we are able to let it go and hopefully change someone's perspective and sure. give them not only inspiration, but the courage for their second chance.
Absolutely.
And on that note, folks, stay uncensored and be inspirational. Ciao for now. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Uncensored Inspiration. Please remember to like, share, follow, and subscribe. All the things that help us to serve the community to speak freely and think boldly. Ciao for now.